This is Len Oliver, side three. So we've talked about Suez, which was the main thrust of my project, but you're a Second World War veteran, so if you can tell us about your Second World War experiences. You called up in
1944. The call up was at Squires Gate Holiday Camp, which is a little bit of a laugh, Blackpool. So up we goes. It was number one ITC then, infantry training centre. We would originally have gone to Worley, but Worley, on board, was the HQ of the 21st Army Group. So he gets up there, and my feeling is my first meal, no knives or forks, and just bang this and mash. They said, right, oh, good telling outside, you've got to get your bed. So you pick up a canvas, sort of a canvas sort of bag, and they took you over to a stable sort of place, and you filled it with straw, and that was straw mattress. And that was your bed for six weeks. Anyway, you wake up every morning and there'd be straw on the floor. You'd quite expect to see eggs lying about. Anyway, always when you was in training, always telling you that you was going to be the army of occupation. You'd never see a home. People wouldn't want to see you. And we're on the drill square two or three times there. And called to a halt, and the gates open at the other end. In come RAF men, maybe 100, 200 of them. And think, oh, maybe it's open day. Let's see what the army works like. And it's like, oh no, lady, there for the infantry. Oh, my God, it's nothing to get a bit ugly. And another week went by, same thing again. Blue air arm, bell bottoms. Open day? No, there's reinforcements. 2 days hadn't happened then, but on the morning of 2 days, we're on parade, first parade, muster parade, and the sergeant said, the German radio has reported landings in the Normandy Peninsula. Everybody cheered, and the sergeant said, quiet! And anyway, you'll never get there, the war will be over before Christmas. That's all we heard. Anyway, we then pass over to what they call basic training, which is where I went over to the Essex Regiment at events, probably following for 3 years.
Did they put you in the Essex because you were an Essex man? You were born and brought up in Essex, yeah. So there was a local connection. Yeah. Did you have any choice?
Not really, but I did. But they said, well, would you like to go to the RA? Guns, they shoot you bitches with plays on bloody presses. But it didn't work either, so there you go. So anyway, we've done our basic training. In that time, all 48 arrows were hit on the head. There was none. So, due day come and went. In the July, early July, we moved back toward. But before we left Blackpool, in Blackpool, we had a soft pot in Blackpool. They treated us like, because it was not an RAF place. They had people there in convalescent homes. At the back of our camp, there was a big RAF training centre, which threw us out of the ground, didn't it? And we was the only army, so we got treated quite well. Darky uniform. Yeah, they're good members. Then before we left, because Blackpool was just like peacetime, they had their awake week, which is like a holiday. And everything was working. The Pleasure Beach was working, all the fun rides, everything. And the Dragon Tower, you could go in for 9 pence, see a circus in there, see Richard Dixon on the organ, go dancing, everything. And it was lovely. Before we left, the people of Blackpool, they put on a nice show, and we were all invited to it. We all invited to it, so we went on to the ice show. Then after that, we was on the train, and we came down to Worley in Brentwood. Well, it's come near the end of it, basically, had about 2 weeks to do. And whilst we were there, we'd never seen them before, the flying bombs were coming over. About 4 or 5 landed round Worley and Brentwood. And wonder what the hell they were, didn't we? And from there, we then came home 7 days leave. So when we went home, we were nearly fully trained soldiers. Mm. We went home with our lovely service hats on, and dress hats on, and whatever. Looking lovely and fit, and God knows what, nicely pressed up. And still didn't think we were going to go anywhere. Anyway, 7 days leave, you just see in the paper about, you know, things going in Normandy and whatever. Well, you still weren't going anywhere. Anyway, comes back off leave, finish our train at Worley. We then told we're going to the 8th Suffolk up in Weybold in Norfolk, which is where they were doing what they call a reserve div training. And we went up there, and we were there for 6 weeks. Don't know what we've done the training, done a little more additional training, done mine lifting with the old bayonet, Polish mine detector, done a bit on enemy weapons, the old Spandau and whatever, Tommy gun, done a massive assault course, a mile long on Holcomb Beach. It was really hard work. We were all in a civvy sort of house, company office. Up the road from us was a big RA camp where we used to go to the pitches. The places in between was Cromer. One place was Cromer. Blakeney was the other place.
Was the emphasis on getting you fit and getting you used to using your variety of weapons?
Yeah.
So was there anything on tactics or?
Plenty of tactics stuff. Yes, plenty of that. We had no end of night ski. They called night ski and went on night patrol, flag in your face with coca. And the old cat comforter on. Couple of shelly arrows. Mm. Yes, we've done a lot of that. A lot of street fighting in real buildings, street fighting, which you find entirely different when it came to the real thing, but never mind. The thing I was very pleased with was the emphasis on the weapon training, which I was always quite pleased with. They got you used to the weapons and what have you.
Was that when you started to work towards being a machine gun, a light machine gun, a medium machine gun?
You know, it started to work that way, and you still weren't going anywhere. But towards the end, we start to hear, hello, this is a place where they've got a drafting company. So anyway, when we get in about the 4th week of the 6 week, we heard, right, there's a drafting company at Blakeney, and this is, if you're 19, you go to Burma. If you're 18, you go to BLA, which is BLA, the British Liberation Army. So, oh my God, so we're coming to the bit where you're going to get, it looks like it's going to happen. So anyway, we finished off our training at Weybourne, and finish off over that wonderful assault course, a mile long, on Holcomb Beach, one company against another. Two officers had a bet who could be the fastest. Of course, we had to be the fastest, didn't we? So
they said, well, we'll do it again. Anyway, and that's how we wound up, and we had a big lecture by the colonel of this battalion, trained the battalion, to tell us that we were now going on embarkation. Embarkation, baby? Bloody hell. So I thought, well, I better not say anything to my folks, my friend. So I just left it at that. So I came home and said, oh, well, you know, leave all that. During that time, which is in the September, was when the airborne Arnhem thing was on. And I thought, oh, well, things must be moving on a piece. And then, of course, we heard, but it was aired very lightly in the newspapers about Arnhem, you know, okay, we got so far, this is it, so many thousand have got out, which I believe was about 3,000, I think. And well, that was it. So I went all through, didn't say much to me folks, went back. We had a kit inspection and God knows what, and we were told we were standing by. Now, we paraded one morning, said parade at 6 o'clock in the morning, and there was 600 of us all told. We paraded on the square, and another friend, we were waiting men, that is, in case somebody fell sick, we took the guy's place. And these people, they weren't detailed for anything. They just got on these trucks, and we were left behind. And these people went off, and never heard much more about them until one of them wrote to me 6 months later. They whipped onto these trucks down to Norwich on the train and away to Oxford. That was in Oxford. And when they looked out the train, these guys are airborne, berries. So I thought, hey, you guys, you're in the airborne. And they were in a glider troops. And they went up in a glider troops. And that was it. Now, us didn't know about the time to wait, as I said. We stayed on. We was on the next draft that had come through. So he gets on the train, and we comes all the way down to Gravesend in Kent. Big transit camp there, checking all your gear, see you got all your gear. Jackknives, I had a collection of jackknives, I had about 6 jackknives. And incidentally, I didn't smoke, so I had plenty of smoke, didn't I? And from Gravesend, I said, well, you're going down to Eastleigh. Well, Eastleigh was a huge, great transit camp near Southampton. So in this transit camp, and the cinema is working 24 hours a day. More kit checks, another jackknife. I think I had half a dozen in the end. You could get what you want. Nobody paid for anything anyway.
So if something's missing, you were just given another one?
Yeah. No,
so you had complete kit to go to
and cigarettes. I reckon I'd make £400 or £500. Oh, more than nothing. Anyway, we got the order to move. So later. So he goes down to Southampton and we put aboard a boat called the Princess Astrid. There's several others on this boat, there's about 6 on this boat. And we were going. But at first, I think I said we were going to DF, I think, but we didn't. We pulled into our stand. We had an escort, we had a destroyer escort to take us. Now, they told us we were getting out of our stand. Now, our stand had only been taken 2 days before, and they were still fighting in the docks. So the thought was we couldn't get into our stand, the ship, that was the boat. So what they'd done, they sent landing craft out to us, all landing craft. And you jumped from the deck into the landing craft, and a couple of sailors catch you. Now you could imagine, I was near the end, so the boat was getting bloody higher than this. And you got all your webbing on, you got your bloody great FSMO, bloody great pack with a blanket tied round your arms and everything, and you've got to jump. Bloody hell.
What sort of height were you jumping?
Well, you can imagine that it was a boat and you were looking down in the landing craft. I was
would say, you were jumping about 20 foot for the start. Yeah. And don't forget, you've got to lay for this, what were your dread was, the ship alongside. You know, some of this gap, you know, you know, flat. Anyway, we all got in. Bruce sleeping as well, and we chugged into our stand, and we got out, rallying on the quay. We marched up to this barracks, you know. And the thing I noticed when we got in was again pretty well on what they call a RHU, reinforcement holding unit. And we got in, and we got a meal. And all I remember these meals was, it always did this with these biscuits. And this Vienna sausage, and this sausage stayed with me right through to May 1945. There's sort of a spice sort of sausage coming out of the tin, you know. And this bacon that came out, all like a globule of grease, you know. But anyway, they then took us down to where we were going to sleep, and they were three-tier beds, German army style. And they were as high as, if you saw a top one, as high as the ceiling in here. And we were there. I woke up the next morning, and the thing that got me was, he said, oh, there's a wall. And we were all this, right there, but you see these people drew it up on the screen. So, where's the damn wall, you know? And anyway, next thing I know, Kit Kat, another night, and some more cigarettes. I didn't smoke, did I? And, still talking. And, I wrote a couple of letters after me, well, all meantime, of course, I never got to know because, of all things that you sent home to your mother was your PT kit. Would you believe it or not? PT kit. Yeah, you had to send that home. Why? Well, I don't know. And, of course, everything was going to bad. And, that's it. And then, right, next is right. You're moving up to a place called Shield. Huh? Where's that? Anyway, get some trucks, moves up the Shield. In the monastery. And we start to get these buzz bombs coming over. Loads and loads of buzz bombs dropping all over the place. One thing I found out about the Shield was, was where this man or woman who wrote this Ave Maria, black. And we're there, quite a nice area, and we're there a day, and then we told Redo, we've gone to the Essex, there in Rosendale in Holland. So the truck's coming down for us in the Essex, and that's how we joined the Essex in Rosendale. I didn't. Got into Rosendale, we were put up in the rear company there, HQ, because the company we were going to join, or companies, they were doing an attack over the River Mark, so we weren't there. So that was my introduction to the war.
And that was when you first joined the battalion. Which battalion, Essex Regiment?
Second. Yeah.
And were you badged up?
Yes.
Once you got there, I mean, did you?
Into the 49th Division.
Yeah.
And then.
That's when you got your 49th Division badges, when you joined the battalion.
Yeah. 56th Brigade, 49th Division. And then I joined the C Company, and then we were sent on up to a position at Moordyke.
When you joined the company, they'd just come back from an attack. What was the situation? Had they taken casualties? You were joining...
They said, well, now, we're all in the meeting. We've been billeted in the meeting. The company plans in the meeting, so-and-so, in some sort of a cattle, they've taken over. And I went in the room, and I said, this is the company. Look around. About 60 odd people. I thought, well, used your company of about 130 men, is what you're saying? And I thought, no, we seem to be low on numbers. And at night, they said, well, yeah, this is the company. What? Bloody hell. And I was put in 13 platoon. And that's why I've never been put off by 13 to this day. All 13 platoon. Wherever we went, it was lucky. And then.
How were you received by the other guys in the platoon?
Well, it's all fresh meat. Glad to see your friend group, you know. Oh, beautiful stuff. Yeah. There we we had our first initiation at Moerdyke.
And were you sort of linked with an experienced soldier? So that you learned the ropes very quickly?
Yeah, old Taffy Griffiths. Yeah. And the first real battle was my initiation, all this shell fire, God knows what, was in Venlo on the German-Dutch border. We put in this attack. We rode up on kangaroos, they were sawing down Germans. Mm-hmm. Got a turret off the troops from riding them. And I got a hell of a stomp pulling through. And we got out of them. And then.
When you say stomp, our artillery or Germans?
Germans. Yeah. That's with the old mountain, naval surface, mines all over the bloody place. But it seems to me. And we got out, and we were advancing across this field. Get to these woods that we've got to get, and we got tanks. There's about five tanks supporting us, this company of ours. But I look to the left, and all of a sudden, bang, I see this track fly off, this tank, yeah, right. And bang again, there's another one, that's two tanks, not tanks. Anyway, by the time we got to the wood, there was only one tank with us, the rest of the guns, you know, really pretty.
Were they Shermans or?
Yeah, they were Shermans. Yes. Yeah, yeah. They were blown the track. So mines. Mines. Oh, my God.
But they were anti-tank mines, so you were safe if you could walk on them. Yeah.
And the other thing was that when we got the edge of this wood, well, it's as far as we got, we dug in. And it was stopped us, so we did some over the cover. Of course, I was starting to get shaky. With this man called Griffiths. And he said, "Do you smoke, lad?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, it's a time to learn." I did. And I've smoked ever since. and won't give it up. And he did stop us. He said, "It may end up the trails."
So what would you do when you're under artillery fire? I mean, you just keep digging
for the rest.
Yeah.
You can't do nothing there, but you zero in there, all the way around it. I know we've got in the making, you've got to get overhead cover, that's the next thing. Chop down a few trees and get some, what you can, and get a bit of cover over you. Directed, of course, you haven't had any lorry anyway. But, well, that's what survival will do. And, that's how come that I smoked, and that was my first initiation to battle.
And were you a Bren gunner?
Yeah, I was a Bren gunner at that time.
Which position on the section were you? No.
I was number two. Carried the Zealand, yeah.
You carried it,
yeah. Yeah, and that was the thing. We always make sure you've got a bandolier of ammunition for the Bren.
Can we just talk about your kit at this time? So you carry the Bren gun.
Yeah.
Did you have a rifle as well?
No.
So you carried the Bren. Mm. So you carried the Bren, somebody else fired it?
Yeah.
So your job was to change
it? Well, we taught him to change it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you carry a rifle, sometimes you carry a Bren. You become all rounders. Because the main thing is, the Bren is always the thing. That's the thing. It's the thing that became an infantryman's backbone. That was the thing, that Bren. You can fire that Bren, you can keep people's heads down, can't you?
How many men
in
a section?
In a section?
In a
Bren
section.
Well, it's only two, because you make up a section, you see. In an infantry section, there's only about eight, if you're lucky. Sometimes there's only four. See how small we were. Because we lost a complete platoon at Zeppelin, you know. We got knocked out by one of our own tanks. So when we went into the Battle of Arnhem itself, we was only two platoons,
yeah.
So we made it up with where they say there's three Brens in an infantry platoon, you know, three sections, right? It was supposed to be about 30 men, but it isn't. Where we had only two platoons, we put two Brens in each section. So anyway, you could do make up firepower, mm-hmm. for manpower.
Did you carry fully charged up magazines?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
yeah.
In your pouches,
yes, that was
and
it.
And also the rifle would carry them.
Yes. And yeah. You carry a yoke with more pouches, so you're number two. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And bandoliers, all masses of ammunition. Oh, yeah. If you think, and you had a 36 grenade, you know, the grenade, and the smoke one, you know.
Yeah.
Plus you carried a shovel.
Yeah.
and probably if you're number
spare
two,
kit as well with all the spare,
pardon?
Spare barrel.
You must have a spare barrel. Oh yes.
So when a section was reduced to two men, you had to carry all that kit.
Yes. That's your lifeline. That's your life. Plus, you carry your hardtack, sardines. Oh yes, quite a life.
So after your first battle, what happened next?
Well, we then got relieved after about 2 days under patrols. Germans put in an attack, we beat it off. Then we got relieved. I said, oh, you're being carted in trucks, and we're going to Nijmegen. Oh, are we? As we're coming back, we're not going to say the previous 2 days where you got, where I told you these tanks, they run out?
That's okay.
Yeah, these tanks coming off, you know, we're hitting the mines.
Yeah.
If we come back to that area, we saw these REs stacking up mines. There was 200 mines, I reckon, being stacked up. We were lucky, weren't we? And there was a few anti-personnel amongst them, so we were lucky. Anyway, we get back to this so-called assembly area where the trucks were going to be. There were no trucks, were there? So we marched back to where we were going to be for the night before we went to Nijmegen. And
how long had you been in the line at that stage?
We'd been in about roughly about a week.
Yeah. How did you feel physically?
Oh, pretty drained and very smoky. I could smoke well.
Yeah. And you'd taken casualties during that battle.
Yeah, we lost. I told you, that's when we lost five going in, you know. That.
And you lost men from your section, did you?
Yeah.
So that'd be the first time you'd
seen. Yeah. Pretty rough. I wouldn't say no hero. No, nobody's any heroes. All you want to do is live a life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we came, then we went up, and then from there, we went up in to Nijmegen, and we did Nijmegen a couple of days, and then we moved on to our, where was that place? That was Elst, that was it, Elst.
What was the scene in Nijmegen? Because that had been heavy fighting there in 1944.
That's right. We weren't so very far behind that. On the just before you go over the Nijmegen Bridge, there was this German 88 gun that had been knocked out, you know. Oh, there's all signs that had been battles, you know. Oh, yeah. Which we'll read, nothing. What the Dutch got up to for us, they ran this thing called the Winter Gardens. And that was where we used to go for films and whatever. So they done fairly well for us there.
So you looked after. Were you greeted as liberators?
Oh, yeah. They thought the world of us. Yeah, they done well. Yeah. They were very, very good.
But Nijmegen was still in British hands, wasn't it?
From we took over from 49th Division, took over from the 50 Div, which due to casualties, was breaking up because they took heavy casualties. So... we absorbed some of the men from the 50 Div, Tyne and Tees, and the rest, who were desert men and that, they went home. So the strength of the 49th Division went up to about 30,000, but we were a division short.
Can I just stop you there? 'Cause we're